I'm sorry, Jim, I'm going to stop the subsidy to PBS. I'm going to stop other things. I like PBS. I love Big Bird. I actually like you, too.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. In Washington, D.C., I'm Ron Elving.
And at the studios of WBUR in Boston, I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, I assume you're there for that all-important Yankees-Red Sox series that ended the baseball season.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the Red Sox playoff tickets. That's a good one. No, I'm sorry. No, actually, I'm giving a speech, but I just flew in from St. Louis, where St. Louis Public Radio put us all up, and we had a little debate-watching party. You know, they had this debate. They had this presidential debate between...
When was that?
This was Wednesday night.
Oh, somebody should have told the president. He would have liked to have been there.
Yeah, somebody should have told Jim Lehrer. He should have been there too.
No, Jim Lehrer was there. He just didn't particularly want to take part.
We're back.
We're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
But that's okay. But back to Jim Lehrer, I assume that a lot of people told me that they said that he should have taken charge. I know a lot of debate moderators don't want to be part of the story, and they just want to let the guys go at it. And I kind of thought that while he didn't ask any questions like, Governor Romney, how do you differ? You know, what do you think?
Any questions. But why does Jim Lehrer have 12 of these to his credit? Why is he the one that both candidates can always agree on? Why is that?
Well, I don't know if the candidates have a say in it.
Oh, yes, they do. Absolutely. Okay. And that is why Jim Lehrer keeps getting chosen as the moderator, because both sides have a veto. And he is popular with the candidates largely because he is seen as being not only an honest broker, fair, even-handed sort of guy, but also because he basically isn't going to really take them to task or hold them to a format. And that's what the candidates prefer.
That may be the case, but I mean, thinking back in previous debates, I do remember, kind of remember Lehrer having more of a pulse at these debates, and then it just seemed like, I mean, Romney obviously didn't want to be stopped. Mitt Romney reminded me a little bit of the fact that he had to have his time during the primary debates with his fellow Republicans. I'm sorry, I must have my point of view, and Lehrer let him have that. What I liked about the debate is, one, first of all, it wasn't nasty, which is a good sign, because if you listen to the commercials at all, they're awfully
terribly
nasty.
Terribly nasty, yes.
Yeah, awful. And it was civil, and again, I haven't done any fact-checking because I don't believe in fact-checking, I don't believe in facts or this podcast, but whatever I believe in, I thought watching them go at it, I kind of enjoyed it.
I think it was a quick 90 minutes. It was not a painful 90 minutes, as it might have been.
This podcast?
And many people don't realize it's 90 minutes.
it goes so fast.
There is the possibility that if you had read the debate in transcript, as opposed to seeing it, experiencing it in the moment, you might have a very different impression of it. But that's really not how debates work. Nobody reads them until much later.
I read a review that of those people who didn't watch the debate, just read the transcript, they think Nixon won.
Absolutely. I knew that's what you were going to do.
Yes.
All right.
So I know the obvious question, because we do this every debate, and the question is, who won?
Well, there is no question who won. Insofar as you're going to have that conversation at all, it has to be the determination of the vast number of people who watch the debate, either the professional observers, the media people, or the polls of people who watched who weren't already established hardcore partisans of one candidate or the other. And in those measures, there's no question. This was a clear win for the challenger, not just because he stood on stage and took the stage with the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief, but because he took charge on that stage. He not only looked like he was the equal of the president, he pushed the president around, and the president didn't push back. That's why it looked like one guy won and one guy didn't.
I didn't see it that way. I did see that obviously Romney wanted to make every point that he thought of, and I thought all his responses and rebuttals to the president were very substantial and clear cut and well spoken. I thought Obama did have kind of like a "why do I have to be here" kind of attitude. In some ways, I thought the Obama persona was similar to what the president said in 2008 when he said, you know, "you're likable enough, Hillary." It just seemed dismissive and one of those "I wish I were somewhere else" kind of moments.
It's my anniversary. My wife and I are having our 20th anniversary. He began by telling us that, which I understand for a lot of women was a nice touch. But then he went on to give the impression that he really wished he could go out to dinner with his wife and wouldn't like to be there with Mitt Romney for another night.
So when he said sweetie, he was talking about Mrs. Obama, right? Not Mitt Romney.
It's actually, I thought he was talking to Lair. But one criticism a lot of people had of this debate from both sides was that it was a little hard to watch and listen to because they were so wonky. They got into not only the details, the nitty-gritty of a lot of issues, but they used a lot of shorthand. They threw around a lot of huge numbers. They referred to, you know, Dodd-Frank as though that was a person that people might have met. This is the way a lot of it sounded.
The question is, does anybody out there think that the big problem we had is that there was too much oversight and regulation of Wall Street? Because if you do, then Governor Romney is your candidate. But that's not what I believe.
That's just not the facts. Look, we have to have regulation in Wall Street. That's why I'd have regulation, but I wouldn't designate five banks as too big to fail and give them a blank check. That's one of the unintended consequences of Dodd-Frank. It wasn't thought through properly. We need to get rid of that provision because it's killing regional and small banks. They're getting hurt. Let me mention another regulation in Dodd-Frank.
You say one thing that did strike me about Romney is that he seemed to be the Romney of old in that he was no longer trying to appeal to the conservative elements or the far conservative elements of the Republican Party, but he was trying to reach out to the 9 or 10 people in this country who haven't made up their minds yet. And much of what I heard seemed to be pretty moderate.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, about taxes, about the role of government, about regulation. And maybe this is the real Mitt Romney that, you know, maybe he thought once he gets the nomination, the real Mitt Romney comes out. But after that 47% disaster of that leaked tape.
Never mentioned in the course of the entire debate by the president. Never mentioned.
That was a surprise to me, too. And I'm sure as we're speaking today, his advisors are saying that, you know, you let him off the hook on many, many things. The perception of Romney was even more accentuated that he was just out of touch and elite and out for the rich. And between jobs and middle class, those words got mentioned more times in this week's debate than, I guess, any debate in history. But Romney made it clear that he was aware of the damage of that leaked video, and I guess that was one of the things he wanted to correct.
And right from the beginning of the debate, he was talking about people who plucked at his sleeve and said, "Can you help me, Governor? I've lost my job. I've lost my house. My husband's lost his job. Can you help me?" He was telling stories like that, telling stories on his own behalf, telling stories on Ann Romney's behalf, trying to humanize himself, and also giving the impression that he thought he could get away with pivoting back to the middle on a whole range of issues, as you said, because he figured if he wins the debate, if he pumps some life into his campaign, which has been kind of moribund at times the last month, the conservatives will stick with him because they'll see him as a winner again. President Obama seemed to be doing something very similar. He was pivoting to the middle. He was appealing to those undecided, few as they may be. And he was saying things like, well, on Social Security, I'm not sure there's really that much difference between us. Boy, you could imagine every liberal activist in the country going, what? Are you giving the Republicans the Social Security issue?
Especially
and
all the
no
ads.
Difference?
Right, exactly. Especially all the ads we've been watching the last couple of weeks, both sides saying how different they are from each other. And when you listen to Wednesday's debate, it's, my goodness, how much alike they are.
So Obama's getting beat up the day after the debate by the left. And meanwhile, Romney makes a surprise visit to the Conservative Political Action Committee, which is meeting there in Colorado, conveniently not far from the debate site. And he's a hero there. Now, my suspicion is if he had not done well or if the president had done better and this had not been considered such a knockout for Romney, my suspicion is he would not have gone past the CPAC convention because he would not be all that welcome there and people would not be that happy to see him and he'd get a lot of criticism. As it was, he was robed in glory and they were glad to see him and they didn't give him a lot of grief about all those moderate positions he enunciated.
You know, the reaction we've been seeing to the not only to the debate but the campaign itself is just kind of like a kind of roll your eyes because only a few days ago everybody was doing already the postmortems of Romney's candidacy. He just didn't take it to Obama. Ryan was useless. Ryan should have been used more. We should have done this, should have done that, and as if it were over. And now it's kind of interesting to hear, I assume we'll hear, from the Democrats saying that maybe perhaps Obama wasn't really into this and should have done this and should have done that. But of course, we do have two more presidential and one vice presidential debate to go. And of course, that could change the dynamic as much as this may have changed it.
It's possible. We have seen a mixed bag on this. If you go back back over the last seven incumbent presidents who have all debated, counting Obama, you had three who came out and debated, Ford and then Carter and then Reagan, and really had pretty rough outings. I mean, it's debatable whether Gerald Ford would have won or lost if he hadn't debated Jimmy Carter. Clearly, Jimmy Carter got beat up badly in the Ronald Reagan debate in 1980. That cost him. And then in 1984, Ronald Reagan had a pretty lousy first debate. In fact, just watching it again this past week, I was astonished at how poorly he had done. But he came back in the latter debate. He had that opportunity in a subsequent debate, and he largely recaptured the imagination of the swing voters.
Even though, if you also remember, at the end of that second debate, he had this meandering closing statement where he was driving down the California coast and God knows where he was going. But what everybody does remember of that second debate is that famous, "I will not make an issue of my opponent's youth and inexperience." Everybody laughed and everybody thought, you know, game, set, match, it's over. But the thing is, with Reagan and Mondale, even if Mondale did win the first debate and held his own in the second debate, he was still so many points down, whereas it, by all indications, it seems like Obama-Romney has been tightening in recent days.
The interesting thing is, if you go back over those previous six incumbents before Obama, who are all willing to debate, you had Ford and Carter and Reagan and Bush 1 and then Clinton and then Bush 2. If you look at all of those, the only one who clearly won his first debate and used it to essentially slam the door on his opponent was Bill Clinton in 1996 with Bob Dole. And that just wasn't a contest. And Bob Dole was not on a par with Bill Clinton as a debate performer. But all of the others put their reelection in at least some jeopardy with one rocky debate performance. Some were able to recover. I mentioned Reagan, of course, who recovered hugely. And also the second Bush was also able to recover. So they joined Ronald Reagan in the ones who were able to be reelected.
And I kind of think that Republican candidates down the line, down the ballot, you know, running this year, may have seen things differently as well. There was just the other day, Tommy Thompson, the Republican candidate for the Senate in Wisconsin, was talking about, well, sure, I'm not doing so well. I mean, I'm having problems with the top of the ticket. So I just wonder if Romney was seen as a drag on Republican hopes a couple of weeks ago, maybe Republican candidates around the country got a shot in the arm. I noticed Rick Tyler, who is a former top aide to Newt Gingrich, who's now working on Todd Akin's campaign in St. Louis, where I just was. Rick Tyler tweeted something like, "Romney was so impressive, he's like Todd Akin." I'm sure. I mean, that's I don't know if that's a legitimate comment or not, but the point is, I don't know if Romney wanted to like to hear that.
A shot in the arm, I think, in a lot of ways, not only for those down-ballot candidates, but for the conservative media who have been having a hard time getting excited about their candidate, a shot in the arm for the financial side of the Republican ticket. They had been kind of petering out a little bit in their challenge to the president for fundraising honors in this election, and that was true down-ballot as well. So a lot could change because this one debate has so revived the hopes of the Republican Party across the board. Now, one of the places where Romney might be vulnerable in the analysis of this debate would be the number of times that he was stretching the truth, shall we say, or pushing out a line that is very hard to defend, the $716 billion cut to Medicare, which everyone pretty much knows is not a cut to recipients, but he continues to insist that it is. And, of course, his claim that he doesn't have a $5 trillion tax cut plan, when more or less everybody who describes his plan calls it a $5 trillion tax cut plan. He's had a lot of those pile up and a lot of political fact-checking organizations going after him about it. But he, to some degree, shifted that burden over onto Obama and Obama's claims with this line in the debate itself.
I know that you and your running mate keep saying that, and I know it's a popular thing to say with a lot of people, but it's just not the case. Look, I got five boys. I'm used to people saying something that's not always true, but just keep on repeating it and ultimately hoping I'll believe it. But that is not the case, all right? I will not reduce the taxes paid by high-income Americans.
Okay. That comes as a surprise, I think, to a lot of high-income Americans who had been donating to the Romney campaign and a lot of other conservatives who listened to him all the way through the Republican primaries. But that seems to be the moderate mitt that we're getting for the last month of the campaign.
Yeah, and but at the same time, while he's saying I will not reduce the taxes, he's not going to raise the taxes of the wealthy Americans either, and that's what President Obama's been talking about from the beginning, that the top 1 or 2% of the high earners should give, as he says, their fair share. So while Romney says I will not lower the taxes, he's certainly not going to raise them, as Obama says he will.
It'll be interesting to see how Paul Ryan deals with that particular issue, because his budget clearly does cut the taxes on higher income earners. And although Mitt Romney keeps saying, I've got my plan, the only plan we've actually seen is his running mates.
And speaking of running mates, there was the latest Joe Biden gaffe when he talked about how the middle class has suffered the past 4 years. Now, of course, Romney did a little dig at that quote that may, some people may have missed during the debate. But again, you know, we always talk about great vice presidential moments when Lloyd Benson wiped the floor with Dan Quayle and everybody said, oh, Quayle looks like the deer in the headlights and he looks ridiculous. And, of course, Bush Quayle in 1988 won 40 out of 50 states. So I think there's a lot to talk about that you know, Biden, there's a lot on Biden's shoulders, a lot on Ryan's shoulders. But I still think that when that gets out of the way, it's back to the presidential race and back to the presidential candidates, the two more debates that follow, the town hall meeting and then the one focused on foreign policy.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving in Washington.
And I'm Ken Rudin in Boston.
Join us again next week when we'll load the podcast one day late to accommodate the vice presidential debate on It's All Politics from NPR. Get up.